We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Metro, read by Harriet Cass.
ITV's Jeremy Kyle wants to have a crack at writing a novel. He says, I have few ideas, and that's partly due to the guests on my show.
And our thanks to Miles Harper for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Frances Ween and Will Smith. And opposite them on my left, Hugo Rifkin and Andy Hamilton. Francis, who elected to be economical with the truth?
No idea.
Two points.
It's the final of that talent contest, yeah. Britain's Got Men in Suits. And very exciting it was too. But actually, it did strike me when I was watching it that they are uncannily like the judging panel of Britain's Got Talent. You've got the Mr. Nasty character, and you've got the sort of smoothie chops public school boy with the rather off-putting sheen on his face. And then you've got Nick Clegg as Amanda Holden. What could be more of But they did their stuff, and Nick Clegg did his usual shtick about... he just basically stands there with his hands in his pockets looking all nonchalant, and every so often goes, you too. There you go again. And David Cameron said a lot of very odd things, one of which was, I want a government that feels the beating heart of entrepreneurs within it. I don't know what that means, but it sounds faintly sexual to me. And Gordon, bless him, I think he's suffered enough, don't you, Phil? Did you see this week? He's been removed from Time magazine's list of the 100 most influential people in the world. And they've replaced him with Lady Gaga.
It was on BBC One, and it was the third one. I thought they might spruce it up a bit. I was kind of half hoping that they'd sort of incorporate a little bit of Total Wipeout into it. And they'd have that wall with the boxing gloves coming out, trying to pick them off as they were speaking.
Can I tell you that I tuned in a couple of minutes early, and Anne Robinson was glaring at me, and I thought, oh, my God, David Cameron's forgotten to put his face mask on.
Fascinated by his upper lip, David Cameron's upper lip. He's got one of these kind of like sort of Errol Flynn kind of spiv moustaches you can see struggling to burst from beneath the skin, which I reckon if he gets in, he will wear all the time. And he'll be there sort of twirling it on Newsnight.
Yeah, tying women to railway tracks.
Well, I always think that Cameron, he has the eyes of a man who's saying good morning as you arrive at work whilst he's wondering if you got the email that sacked you.
He frightens me, Cameron, when he gets all sort of impassionate and he looks down the lens and tells me to get involved with Big Britain, and he says, save your local post office, elect your police chief, sack your local MP, start your own school, run your own pub, and I think, well, when am I going to get my lie down? Is there any... You know, I mean, what's he going to be doing while I'm doing... And the other thing that I think ought to be pointed out is that, you know, he talks about a sort of society where volunteers do most of it. And of course, there are lots of volunteers who are brilliant, sort of civic-minded, responsible people. But a lot of volunteers are also obsessive pain in the arses. And in Cameron's Britain, you know, I don't want to be getting up every 5 minutes to answer the door to some bloke who wants a referendum on what night the bins get collected.
I like the very quick spins that they have afterwards. I have to say, Paddy Ashton did rather better this week. Last week, you referred to Nick Clegg as Nick Clark. And I think Nicky Clark is all we need, and the deficit handled by a celebrity hairdresser. There was a sense, did you not think, with the third debate, that they were saying all the same things you'd heard in the second debate? And you just thought, oh, BBC, always with the repeats. Exactly.
But it was, I mean, all the phrases were the same as the ones they'd used in the previous debates. Mm. But then, like, you know, if you paid a lot of money to go and see Whitney Houston or the Rolling Stones or whoever, you want them to do their hits. You
That's
don't
true.
Want we don't want new material at this stage.
No. Nick Clegg did take some stick for his amnesty for illegal immigrants. And can I just say, I'm all for it. It's criminal gangs that are forcing me to present the News Quiz. In Denmark, I was a photocopier technician, so this has been... the Institute of Fiscal Studies. Anybody keep an eye on this week?
They've said that none of the main parties have come clean on how much they're going to actually have to cut public spending by.
Yeah, that's right. Well, in fact, I'll give you an extra point for that. The Institute for Fiscal Studies, does it not sound like the least fun place ever to work? Turn that light off. Do you think we're made of money? Now, What's the general view about whether the Scottish leader should have been allowed to be part of the debate? What do we think about that? Nobody. did you get a sense of the BBC that they said no to Alex Salmond because they'd already built the set? You know, they've got,
got those three lectins.
And you'd have to give them a beanbag at the end or something. Yeah.
The designer's saying, well, we'd need a fourth colour. It just won't work.
I only noticed this very day, in fact, that the SNP leader is called Alex Salmond and the deputy leader is called Nicola Sturgeon. And I quite like the idea of a party entirely fish-related. I think it's... spend all their time ringing each other and saying, your place or mine. All right, time to move on. There were a
hang on, Sandy, I'm just going to write that
thank
down.
Thank you, darling.
Your place or AI. Mine.
Terribly pleased at 6 o'clock this morning. Now, the third and final election debate on the state of the economy took place in Birmingham. The leaders clashed on tax, banking regulations and immigration, but made up in the jacuzzi afterwards. Gordon Brown repeatedly begged us not to make the mistakes of the 1930s, a memorable time when Stanley Baldwin lost a televised debate to a young Ming Campbell. 2 points to Francis. Will, which prime candidate became a penitent sinner?
Oh, this was just a little story that barely made the back pages, where Gordon Brown had an encounter with a woman on camera, and she raised immigration. He got in the car, his mic was still on, and he referred to her as bigoted, which was just, you know, a dream for rolling news. You know, Sky can't wait to get out that Sky chopper. I mean, they could only have been better if she'd have gone on the run down the motorway in a mobility scooter. They could have really... I can't stand rolling news, I have to say. It's like when my parents tell me about their holidays in real time. I just think, oh, come on, guys, get to the highlights. I don't want to hear what food you had on the plane. So everything went completely into overdrive. And I mean, it's very difficult for Brown, really, because what she said, it wasn't that bigoted. It was more just daft. I mean, she said, where are all these East Europeans coming from? We've kind of answered the question. Eastern Europe. And then everyone, of course, accuses him of being two-faced, but you think, well, I mean, we all say one thing, think another. I mean, George Osborne, I mean, I'm pretty sure when he leaves the council estate, he asks for a tetanus jab. I mean, he just... he has that look, and it's... But it's slightly unfair because the politicians, they're expected to go out and mix and interact with ordinary people. You think that's the last thing they want to be doing. I mean, if you want to be prime minister, it's because you want to mix with exciting people like the head of MI5 and the president of the United States. If they wanted to pound the streets and get into arguments with members of the public, they'd have become traffic wardens.
It was bad for him, though. I thought it's possible that Brown could find his way back if David Cameron is caught on camera stabbing the Queen. But having seen the debate, I'm not sure that would do it now, I think. I think he's, you know, he needs Clegg to be pleasuring the corgis at the same time.
So horrible, I can see all of it in...
But he made so many mistakes last week. There was, as well as Bigotgate, which is, let's face it, that's lost him the bigot vote. That's 50% of the public.
Is that what it's being called, Bigotgate?
Yeah, which was also...
Bigotgate sounds like a Yorkshire constituency.
It does, yeah. I come from Bigotgate, me, in Bigotshire. But there's also Peppa Piggate. He was horrendously badly advised, because the first law, if you're a politician, is never, ever, ever appear alongside a cartoon character. The public will get confused. And I've felt angry that Peppa had been dragged into this, had been treated as a political football, because I'm actually in Peppa Pig. I am the voice of the elephant dentist.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And it worries me sometimes when it goes out that I think, well, kids are going to go to zoos, they're going to be disappointed that the elephant's not performing any dentistry.
Can you do the voice of the... Is it just your normal voice?
I'm a cheerful
voice?
Dentist.
You're cheerful?
Yeah,
dentist.
Hello, Peppa Pig, how are you today? Like that.
How does the elephant hold the...
Well, it's only a cartoon. Sandy.
Okay.
But you're right, would be... I think the image of an elephant with a drill in its trunk is quite a frightening one.
Sorry, I've gone off on nothing to do with anything at all in elephant dentistry.
Am I allowed to talk about Gordon Brown again?
Oh, that's Gordon. No,
My favourite bit of Bigotgate was when he went off into the house to say sorry to poor Mrs. Duffy.
39 minutes.
Yeah, well, he was in there, and you know, it got to about 20 minutes, and you started thinking, like, what's happened? He's probably standing there over her corpse with a bloody jar in his hand, sort of going, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God.
He only spent 20 minutes with Barack Obama at the White House. There were some wonderful bits on the television then afterwards, because they were asking anybody and everybody their opinion. And there was this Second World War veteran from Rochdale. He said it was wrong to call someone a bigot, no matter what the circumstances. And I just thought, are you sure there's nobody in the Second World War you'd have liked to have called a bigot? Nobody at all. Just...
All credit to her. The Sun offered her, well, we're not sure, between £30,000 and £50,000.
To do page three.
Yeah.
Gillian Duffy, 62, says.
Yeah. Well, they wanted her to say, I'm going to vote for David Cameron, and she turned it down. You wonder what the reaction of the Sun journalist would have been to somebody turning something down on grounds of principle.
On Wednesday, Gordon Brown was recorded calling pensioner and lifelong Labour supporter Gillian Duffy a bigoted woman shortly after meeting her on the streets of Rochdale. The Daily Telegraph devoted 5 full pages to the gaffe under the headline, Cameron doesn't call pensioner a bigot. Phew. Other memorable political gaffes include Reagan saying he was going to bomb Russia, Paxman calling Cameron a smooth bastard, and Gordon Brown becoming Prime Minister. 2 points to Will. Hugo, who doesn't Clegg want to hang around with?
Well, Nick Clegg has been basically trying to say who he would work with and who he wouldn't work with in the event of a coalition parliament. He's being basically like the school virgin at the disco. And he gets there and he's very excited. And everyone says, who do you want to be your girlfriend? And at first he goes, oh, anyone. You know, I'm really anyone that's thrilled that someone wants to be his girlfriend. But then he starts dancing and he's got some moves. And he gets a bit cocky with it. And he goes, well, not Gordon, because Gordon's got a big ass. And now, because he said he doesn't want to be with Gordon because Gordon's got a big ass, everyone's sort of thinking, well, that's a bit mean. You've got no right to say you're not with Gordon. So he's backing away from absolutely everything he said. I think he's now back saying he would work with anybody.
Well, the Tories are saying that Nick Clegg is holding the country to ransom. And it's a sort of a funny idea of him in some dark room, isn't it? Sending David Cameron bits of Dorset in an envelope shows show that he's serious.
I love the idea of a school virgin. Is that like one step down from prefect? Is that what?
Clegg also said, which I quite like, if the Tories make themselves a roadblock to political reform, they'll find themselves in a cul-de-sac. And I thought, well, you don't really need a roadblock in a cul-de-sac. I mean, half your work is already done for you.
There is something just a little bit too earnest about Clegg at the moment. I just think there's another life where Nick Clegg could be standing up and saying, with the same degree of passion that he gives when he gives his speeches, he could just as well be saying, I love working for Kellogg's. Because we don't just make cereals, we bring families together in the morning. It just, you know what I mean? It's just a bit...
Do we think there's going to be a hung parliament?
The polls indicate that most of the public would like a hung parliament, but I think that's that familiar confusion between the words hung and hanged.
Well, Nick Clegg started the week by saying he's willing to work with anybody except Gordon Brown, and then changed his mind and said he will work with anyone, and then muttering under his breath, except Gordon Brown. Brown accused Clegg of being arrogant, but later went round to his house to apologise. So, 2 points to Hugo. Andy, which Greek tragedy threatens to bring down the house?
Well, this is the ongoing financial collapse of Greece that, yet again... The spectre that's being held up is that the markets will panic. It's all to do with credit ratings, and apparently it's affecting Spain, and there's talk of this domino effect because of the markets panicking. And I always think, why don't the markets just employ less panicky people? And why can't the computers? Didn't they used to have the computer was able to stop them panicking? Whatever happened to that? Why isn't there a sat-nav? Which, when they start doing too many deals, says, you're being silly now, and just disconnects them.
Remember, your country could be at risk if you do not keep up repayments. I find I glaze over with the whole thing. I read the sentence, really? Greece needs to repay 8.5 billion euros of maturing bonds. What the hell is a maturing bond? It sounds like Roger Moore in a cardigan.
The Standard & Poor's, rather wonderfully named credit rating agency, that's done this, the same people who gave the subprime market a AAA rating, so they may not be infallible. But because they're American, there's a conspiracy theory that it's all an American plot to sabotage Europe and undermine the euro so the dollar will be almighty. And it's sort of World War II in reverse, really. America threatening Europe, and we all look to the Germans for salvation. And eventually, after victory, when the Americans win, as they always do, Steven Spielberg will make the movie, Saving Private Finance.
Greece is in emergency negotiations with the EU and the IMF to thrash out the largest bailout in history. The Greek government conducted what was described as fierce horse trading with the EU. The Greeks asked for 120 billion euros and in return have promised Brussels a beautiful wooden horse. Unless they're bailed out in the next few days, Greece's bankruptcy is a fait accompli, which is Greek for hard cheese. Oh, worth doing the question just for that joke. Now, at the end of round one, I can tell you the scores are Francis and Will have got 4 points, but so too have Hugo and Andy. We start round two with a cutting from the astrology section of Psychic News.
Leo, finances are tight and it's hard not to take your frustrations out on a romantic partner. Next time you feel the need to lash out, why not pick up a paintbrush or a power tool?
And our thanks to Jim Woods for sending us that. Francis, why might you soon have an unexpected item in your housing area?
Apparently Tesco are going to build not just houses, but entire villages and towns. And it'll be, I mean, it's part of their ambition to be the cradle-to-grave service. They build your house, they'll give you your mortgage, and then they'll repossess the house when you fall behind and take away all your club card points and banish you to Asda land, which is where it's permanently winter, I believe.
I suppose the houses will echo Tesco's in-store ranges, so you get Tesco finest sizes, which are built of really good things, and then, I don't know what they're called, Tesco value houses made of ground-up hooves or something. So you just know you'd go there to buy your house and you'd be stuck behind somebody trying to buy a bungalow in the queue, taking forever.
Will there be a shorter queue for houses with three rooms or less? Fewer,
thank you.
Well, yes. Tesco's say less.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, it's very controversial.
It is.
On Radio 4.
Would Ocado deliver a house to it? You have to wait in for the man, say, but where's my house?
But how do you know where to wait in until your house arrives? It's a...
Well, that would be a challenge for the driver.
It's a complex philosophical point, isn't it? How will you be in? Well, when you arrive.
I love this. This is a brilliant concept. You're playing a game of hide-and-seek with an Ocado driver.
Well, Tesco's have announced plans to build four mini-villages in southeast England, and keen not to be left behind, Aldi have announced they're going to create four shanty towns. Meanwhile, Barrett Holmes have brought out a range of biscuits. 2 points. Hugo, which miracle workers are having a medical drama?
In hospitals? Yes, in hospitals. Yes. Basically, hospitals, doctors and nurses are complaining. They're saying people come to hospital with some sort of sickness and they expect to get the sort of quality, super-fast, successful treatment that you get on Holby City and dramas like that. They're saying people's expectations of hospital treatment is unrealistic, which I thought is a very cunning bit of spin from hospitals. It's like, it's not that hospitals are too bad and rubbish and awful, it's that TV dramas are too good, and that's the problem.
How stupid are people that they think it'll...
Quite stupid.
if they think they might vote Labour because of Peppa Pig appearing, then I think very stupid is the answer.
Well, I just don't know what they're expecting. I mean, are they expected to be somehow, when they're in there, be embroiled in the kind of love affairs between the doctors and the staff, and then when they leave, it's to a montage?
And if they genuinely thought that being in a ward was like Holby City, they would expect all the nurses and doctors to be related to each other. Because a friend of mine was in Holby City. He was a horrible burns victim or something. And he didn't know the show and he was a bit embarrassed. And they were about to do his first scene. So there was another actor there who he knew who was playing one of the doctors. He said, "Can you just fill me in on who all the characters are?" He said, "Right, well, I'm a houseman. I'm having an affair with the sister there, but that nurse there is the sister's illegitimate daughter by the chief surgeon. He's over there. The chief surgeon's brother is that bloke over there, and that bloke over there is the mother of the sister of the orderly. And my friend said, everyone related and having sexual relationships on the ward, would that be allowed in the NHS? And the actor just said, don't ask.
TV dramas such as Holby City lead patients to expect miracles from health workers, which fuels medical litigation, according to the Royal College of Nursing's annual conference. The new series of the medical drama starts next week in dramatic fashion when a battle-scarred politician is admitted for emergency surgery after accidentally ramming his foot into his mouth. At the end of round two, the scores are Francis and Will have got 6 points, but so too have Hugo and Andy. Before we start round three, here is a cutting from the Petersfield Post.
Fears that a large pile of feathers on Petersfield Heath were from a dead swan have proven unfounded. The feathers were, in fact, the fallout from a pillow fight.
Now, thanks to Diana Sterling for sending us that. Will, which foreign body has given Britain a slapped wrist?
This is the Council of Europe, who are complaining that Britain is one of the only countries not to have a full ban on smacking. It's probably good to ban smacking, I would think. I'm a parent, I've got a six-month-old baby boy, I don't intend to smack him at all, but it's a two-way street. I'd like to see some other laws that benefit me. Maybe some three-chance rule on him throwing things on the floor, I've just passed him. Ban on pointless dribbling, and a deferrable fine every time he wheezes during a nappy change.
You're right. People bang on about children's rights, but never children's responsibilities.
Yeah. Yeah. He knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah. I think it's definitely a bad idea to hit children, because have you seen the size of children nowadays?
Actually, I originally read the headline as Britain to ban all snacking, and I almost panic-bought Hobnobs. I mean, can you imagine life without snacks? I mean, how are you going to get the strength to beat your children?
There was an article in the Daily Mail by a woman. She was writing, "It's outrageous that Brussels wants to ban us from smacking our children. I smacked my child for the first time this morning, and it was very important, blah, blah, blah." And I was thinking, that's a remarkable coincidence. Is that how it works, that the Daily Mail phones up and says, "Do you smack your children?" And you say, "No, but hold on." No, I do. How many words?
My children are a bit older now, but the rule is that you are allowed to chastise a child as long as you don't leave a mark. And my recommendation is poisoning. That doesn't...
About it. Spanking is wasted on children. It should be like driving and drinking in pubs. They should jolly well wait till they're 18 to partake.
Like the rest of us.
Yes. The Council of Europe is putting pressure on Britain to impose a complete ban on smacking. One defender of smacking said, "I think of spanking as a dangerous tool, but there are times when there is a job big enough for a dangerous tool." This is... is by chance also the Conservative argument for giving control of the economy to George Osborne. 2 points. Andy, which tennis player wishes he'd stayed away from the court?
This is a British tennis player, and if I use the phrase British tennis player, you may have guessed that he's not had a fantastically successful career. And The Telegraph did a piece on him and said he was the world's worst professional tennis player because he had lost 54 consecutive matches. And he sued them for libel. And rather shamefully, in fact, he tried to sue lots of people for libel, and a lot of people backed down. But the Telegraph stuck to their guns, and so and the judge looked at the statistics and said, "Well, of course they can call you that." That's 54 consecutive games. So he's lost the libel case, and apparently it's quite an important libel case in terms of precedent. I mean, it's an interesting statistic. I don't know if you know this, but every 4 seconds somewhere in the world, a British tennis player is knocked out in the first round.
So the BBC offered him £40,000 compensation. And I was thinking, if we start calling each other the worst tennis player in the world, we might finally get some decent money from this gig.
It'll be worse than him.
You'd have to prove that it stopped you earning money as a professional tennis player, wouldn't you?
Well, sitting here has. Robert D has lost a libel case brought against the Daily Telegraph, which described him as the world's worst tennis player. D argued that he wasn't the world's worst, as he had won 20 matches on the Spanish domestic circuit. The Spanish domestic circuit? I hardly think beating an elderly Hispanic maid counts as professional success. Mr. D said the report suggested he had experienced an unrelieved catalogue of failure, which I believe is also available from Argos. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Ween.
This is from the Daily Telegraph. An Australian restaurant refused a blind man entry because a waiter misheard a request to bring in a guide dog and thought the animal was gay. Ian Jolly won $1,500 in compensation at South Australia's Equal Opportunity Tribunal because of his poor guide dog.
My darling, Mr. Will.
This is from the BBC News website. It's that the Sheerness lifeboat and the Thames Coast Guard assisted a man who ran aground off the Elmley marshes on the Isle of Sheppey on the 19th of April. With only a road map for directions, he set off on the River Medway from Gilliam and headed for Southampton. And the man told the rescue team he had been keeping the coast to his right, but he actually ended up just going round and round in circles around the Isle of Sheppey. The Coast Guard advised him that it was easier to get to Southampton by train.
Mr. Rifkin.
This is also from the Daily Telegraph. Olympic 400 metres champion LaShawn Merritt has been suspended after testing positive for an anabolic steroid contained in an over-the-counter penis enlargement product. The 23-year-old American, who faces a two-year ban, said, "To know that I've tested positive as a result of a product that I use for personal reasons is extremely difficult to wrap my hands around."
Mr. Hamilton.
This is from Simon Williams. It's from the Sky News website, and it's a profile of the Salford and Eccles constituency. Salford used to be regarded as a twin city of Manchester, but it has suffered massive depopulation since the war and is now less than half its previous size. It's a very working-class area with unemployment, crime, housing that's often pretty bleak and a problem of properties left empty. Salford has had a university since 1967, and recent regeneration includes the Lowry Centre in the Salford Quays. Eccles is famous for its cakes.
So the final scores are that Hugo and Andy have got 8 points, but this week's winners are Francis and Will with 9. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the BBC News website sent in by Syra Tubb.
Police are investigating a false allegation that the leader of the Liberal Democrats in Bolton has been running a sex club from his home. The councillor has denied the claim, saying, "It's unbelievable. The ceilings are too low for a start."
Goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Ween, Will Smith, Hugo Rifkind and Andy Hamilton. In the chair was Andy Toksvig and the news was read by me, Harriet Cass. The chair's script was written by Simon Littlefield, Lucy Clark and Roger Crooks, with additional material by Hannah George, James Kettle and John Hunter. The producer was Sam Bryant.